This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us from delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
If you've just tuned in, you are listening to Saturday Magazine with myself, Tass and Macca. And we're broadcasting from Joy 94.9, an official vaccination ambassador all the way from the Victorian Pride Centre here in St Kilda.
We're referred to as our excellencies.
Excellencies, we are.
We are.
Now, introduce our Professor, Macca.
Professor Catherine Bennett of Epidemiology from Deakin. Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
I am very good. How are you?
I'm feeling very ambassadorial.
We've had a bit of a crazy time this morning.
Yes. Joy 94.9 is an official COVID ambassador, vaccine ambassador. So we're...
Excellent.
As you know, you recorded a message for our listeners, which is on rotation with a lot of others, and we're ramping it up. So we're talking about vaccination and the importance of it, which is such a nice segue into talking to you.
So, Catherine, let me throw the first question at you. So today I woke up and I discovered that we've almost hit the 2,000 mark. 2,000 people were diagnosed with COVID-19 overnight. These are infections that probably occurred before yesterday. What can we as a community expect over the next month?
Well, we're in that really critical time where even though our numbers are going up, and I know, you know, psychologically, if we go over 2,000, that's going to really throw people. But in fact, we have seen our growth in numbers slowly diminish. And so apart from the bump we had after the long weekend, we have actually still seen this kind of settling of numbers. It's our reproductive number that I can't not talk about is 1.2. It still means we're getting a 20% increase in cases over 4 days, but it's come back down from, you know, 1.6 or higher. That's what we need. We need to see these cases start to level out so that, you know, we know we're at our peak. But most importantly, we're also obviously watching the hospitalisations, and they have pushed up as well in line with the case numbers going up. But thankfully, because we've got good vaccination rates, we aren't seeing that same relationship we would have seen in the past. And at the moment, you know, we're looking at somewhere around 4% of our active cases being in the hospital. Mm. So that's important because, you know, ultimately we don't want people to get infected, but we definitely don't want them getting really sick.
That's a higher proportion under Delta virus than the virus that we had last year, isn't it?
It is. It's actually across all age groups, even though the risk is much lower in younger age groups of being in hospital. It's just that infecting dose people get, they get a more severe illness than they otherwise would have. And so it does effectively double your chances of being in hospital. And as I said, if your chance is low because you're young and fit and healthy, it still doubles it. And we don't like seeing that. But it obviously also has a big impact at the hospital end, if you saw that right across age groups. So it's fantastic to see even those first doses where they are, because even one dose can reduce your risk of hospitalisation for your age group by 2/3. So that makes a big difference.
So, Catherine, can you just explain to us this morning, how does this work? We've got this sort of reproduction rate at 1.2. We've got 2,000 cases being diagnosed, let's say, you know, a day. And yet, in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to open things up. Isn't that sort of counterintuitive? How does that work? Can you explain that for us?
Well, What we're trying to do is actually put the wedge between case numbers and hospitalisations. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest effect you get from your vaccine, so that you can tolerate more cases by protecting people from needing hospitalisation, even if they do become infected. What we saw in Sydney's outbreak actually started nearly a month before ours. And so I always look at our data by what we call epi week, from the day we first had the Delta variant in the community. And it was around this point, you know, that Sydney had also reached its peak.
Yes.
And started to plateau. And you've seen how the case numbers have come down by two-thirds.
Yes.
So that's what could happen in Victoria and what we hope happens, and why I'm watching that reproductive number so closely, because if it can get to one, it can actually push down quite quickly. And now that we're seeing our 12 to 15-year-olds in the mix with the vaccination rates rising there too, it's starting to give us better coverage. And really importantly, the health department, working in communities where it has been a slower uptake, making it so easy so that people can, you know, access the vaccines in their own community and so on, is another important step, as well as people having choice of vaccine over 60. So all of those things will help, you know, bridge the gap, get more people covered by vaccine, and take away from that most worrying risk, which is serious illness.
Let me ask you one more question. I know I'm hogging the airwaves this morning. Sorry, right. Macca. I'm hearing this conversation in the community a lot. Here we are, we've been in lockdown for such a long time, but yet the numbers are just rapidly increasing, and we've now hit almost the 2,000 mark. What's not working?
Well, there's a few things going on here. We have to blame Delta first and foremost. It has been a game changer for all of us that have experienced it. Same for New Zealand and ACT, who still struggle to keep the numbers, you know, where they are, let alone getting rid of the virus in the community. So it's a hard virus to manage there. We do know that we didn't see quite the same impact when we went back into lockdown this time. And like across states, including New South Wales, we're seeing some easing in the amount of restrictions that people are following. So they look at mobility, for example. And so that's where it's hard to hold this kind of lockdown for so long. And we put our normal lockdown in place in Metro Melbourne, but you know, what you have on paper isn't always what you have in practice. And so it's really hard for people who have been dealing with this for so long and aren't hanging in there, or who see people aren't hanging in there and they trying to do the right thing. It's very frustrating. So it's a difficult time. It's always going to be the worst time, is this last month where we're trying to hold it together as we accelerate this last stage of our vaccine rollout to get into this next phase safely. So absolutely, if we can bring the numbers down like Sydney's doing and get it to a level which is more manageable, so your test and trace is working a bit better, your control's a bit better in that regard, then it builds on itself, and that's a much better way to go into easing of restrictions.
That's Macca. Catherine, have we reached our peak, do you think?
I hope so. I worry that if it goes over 2,000, it'll all do our heads in, but at the same time, we're very close to that. We know even when we plateau that the numbers bounce around day to day. Testing tends to drop a bit on the weekend, so you tend... We're still picking up Friday's numbers today, but you know, we probably see a bit of a flattening over the next couple of days, and let's hope that that then becomes the pattern, because that's what we want to see. And we were nearly there before this spike a couple of weeks ago, and we're now getting back down there. So hopefully we will see this level out, and as I said, our vaccination rates are strong enough for that to help, even if our lockdown's not as perfect as it could be. At the same time, with a stronger vaccination backdrop, that should be enough to level this out and start to see some decreasing.
My reading of the Burness report is that we haven't quite hit our peak yet. Is that an accurate reflection, do you think?
It's hard to say, because they weren't anticipating the actual numbers we might have as we go into this scenario. We're still in the first phase of even their modelling, which is basically still in lockdown, and they were predicting the peak to actually come into effect around the 25th or so of October, so towards the end. Sort of hard to read because we don't have the actual numbers, but that's what they were predicting, was a peak of around 2,000 that we might see, and their date was the 25th of October. At the same time, they were predicting that hospitalisations would be in the order of 1,600 or so. That would happen a little bit later. They're sort of out of sync. And even if you take that lag time into account, we're thankfully nowhere near that when it comes to hospitalisations. We've got 578 people, so we're only a third of the people they were predicting we'd have in hospital. This will probably still go up because people who became sick with that, out of those more recent cases when the numbers went up, are still, you know, maybe pre-hospital. There may be people in those groups who need hospitalisation in the next week or so. So we unfortunately have to anticipate those numbers going up. But at the same time, we're a long way under where the Burnet modelling was. And that's the same that happened in Sydney. They also thankfully overestimated the Sydney hospital impacts up there. And again, they think it's because the health department there was saying, and it fits, that the actually not just the overall vaccination rates and the speed of it is faster than they expect in time.
Yes.
But because there's a rapid acceleration, there's actually even better coverage of people with one dose who are still in between first and second doses. So they're not counted in you're fully vaccinated, but that does make a big difference, particularly to
hospitals.
Catherine,
hospital.
We
have a question here from one of our listeners, 286, who asks, have the protesters contributed towards this spike in numbers at the moment?
We never have good direct proof, usually. You don't know that people have been to protests, and they're not necessarily likely to declare that if they even become unwell afterwards. But we do know this time we did have people associated with the protests who were positive, and that's been reported. But actually, when I look at the data, every time we've had a protest, the three bigger protests in Melbourne, we've had a rise in cases 12 to 14 days later, and it's a very distinctive pattern.
Yes.
And they're the only times where we've really seen those peaks, apart from discovering an outbreak, you know, early on when we were still understanding where the virus was in the community. So that's pretty compelling evidence. It does show the risks associated with these events, and while you can't prove it, I think, you know, having the last round of protests and then the following weekend having a bit more mixing across households with the long weekend probably, you know, adds to the risk in that setting as well. So I'm sure we're seeing some effect. See it three times, exactly the same sort of timing, which is what you'd expect. A few generations are spread away from an event, then you start to see more people with symptoms who will get picked up when they get tested on the basis of symptoms alone, not knowing they're somehow connected to an outbreak, maybe associated with the protest.
So, Catherine, rapid antigen testing, just as we close off, Victorian government, I mean other governments have as well, but Victorian government have ordered, you know, millions of them, apparently. And I understand they're predominantly for use in workplaces, is that correct?
At this stage, yes. We're still working with regulations are for supervised use of these. It's a good way to get a quick read on a situation. If you've got staff member who develops symptoms during the day, you can test them and decide whether or not in a high-risk workplace there's any threat associated with that. So this is going to be something that really evolves over time. It may be, as I said, workplace interest in these, but down the track, you know, there might be at-home use as well, you know, test if you've got symptoms rather than going into, you know, sending the kid to school or whatever. So I think we'll see more use of them, but in this early stage it's starting to transition to also changing the way we follow up outbreaks, and that's something we're hearing about in both New South Wales and Victoria, how they manage positive cases as where it's starting to open up events and businesses, you know, so that if you've got someone there who's positive, how do you manage it? And I think rapid testing will be a way that helps manage those earlier and gets on top of it faster and impacts less people.
Right. Unfortunately, Catherine, we're out of time, but thank you again. As always.
Pleasure, as always.
For your input and talking to us and keeping us better informed. I hope you have a nice weekend and stay well.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.